Last week in our sermon, we went with Isaiah to the throne room of God, and I appreciate Mark alluding to that this morning. It really reminds us of the glory of that scene, the holiness of that scene in which Isaiah was able to go and to witness God in this picture that God was presenting to him. And it shows us the immensity of God. And I think as we made the point last week, it shows us our lowliness before God. You remember Isaiah? When he said, "I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips," he realized that. And I think many times as we look at God and we see who He is and what He is and His magnitude and His greatness, as was illustrated in Isaiah's vision, we come to that passage of "Be holy as I am holy." And it is such a challenge for us. And we look at God and we look at ourselves and we think, how can I ever attain that kind of holiness? And the answer to that is actually answered in two words. The only way that we can attain that holiness as God is holy is through Jesus Christ. It's not on our own accord. It's not by the good things that we can present to the Lord and see, tell Him what an addition we are, what a great addition we are to His kingdom. No. It's through the work of Jesus Christ that we have the way to be holy as God is holy. Jesus has prepared this way for us, and it's through His own incomparable holiness that that's taken place. This morning, I'd like for us to talk about the holiness of Jesus Christ. I want us to see who He is. I want us to see the things that He's done. And finally, I want us to understand how that He has prepared the way for us to be holy as God is holy. As we think about Jesus, I suppose one of the things that comes to the mind of anyone who has spent time studying about Jesus is the fact that when we look at Jesus, we understand that He is one who is completely holy in the fact that He is set apart from sin. When we look at the life of Jesus, we see a man who lived sin-free his entire time on this earth. If you're not still there, go ahead back to John chapter 8. And I want us to note as we look in John chapter 8 in this rather fiery exchange that Jesus has with His enemies here. And as Wesley just read to us, we see what comes up when Jesus is basically saying to them, "You must believe in My sonship." And they say pretty much, "We're the descendants of Abraham. We're of something better." And Jesus says that is not the case. That there is a denial of the Father when you deny My sonship. Those verses that He read to us say that. But we continue on down and we look in verses 39 through 45. And what we see here is their objection to Jesus. The fact that they are going to dismiss Him in turn. Verse 39, they answered Him, "Abraham is our father." Remember who Jesus said their father was. They said, "Abraham is our father." Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill Me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works of your father." They said to Him, "We were not born of sexual immorality. We have one Father, even God." Jesus said to them, "If God were your Father, you would love Me. For I came from God and I am here. I came not of My own accord. He sent Me. Why do you not understand what I say? Is it because you cannot bear to hear My word? You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and has nothing to do with the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell you the truth, you do not believe Me." Okay, I read all of that to set our scene for what's about to come. Jesus has told these people, "I am from God. My will is God's will. In rejecting Me, you are rejecting the Father." And so in this exchange, He has made this point. But I want us to note, as we look in verse 46, the question that He asks of them here. He says, which of you convicts me of sin? You ever stopped and considered the magnitude of that question? Here, Jesus, in front of his enemies, is saying, tell me, what are my sins? Which of you convicts me of sins? And I want to come back to that point here in just a second. But I want to make a second point as well, in which he not only asked that of his enemies, he also asked this question in front of his disciples, who surely were standing there listening to this exchange going on. Can you imagine that? Here are the ones who knew Jesus best. Here are the ones who had spent the most time with him. And in front of them, he says, which of you convicts me of sin? I can guarantee you of something. I would never ask that question of you in front of my wife and children. Because not only could they tell you, they would tell you. You know, they would say, yes, he has lots of problems. He's got all of these things. Well, look at what Jesus is saying in front of his disciples. He says, tell me, what are my sins? Point that out to me. Now let's go back to that first point. He says this in front of those who would love to have seen him dead. Those who are ready to see his destruction. And if you go on down, you know the answer that they give. He says, which of you convicts me of sin? You know the charge that they bring against him? They say to him, you are a Samaritan and have a demon. Do you see any specifics being given? Do you see anyone saying, oh yes, I know your language. I know how you blasphemed the name of the Father. Oh, I know what you have done with these women in the community. Nothing like that. The only thing they can do is speak in broad, sweeping generalities because they do not have an answer to that question. Which of you convicts me of sin? The answer was, not a one of them could do that. That point about the sinless nature of Jesus is amplified throughout the New Testament. There is no way this morning we could look at every passage that makes this point. But I want to, just for a minute or two here, go through several. We're not going to make a lot of comments about them. I just want you to note what's being said. As we think about the book of Hebrews, where the writer is making the comparison with the priest of the Old Testament, with Christ being our high priest, he says, for it was indeed fitting that we should have such a high priest. What? Holy, innocent, unstained, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens. We go to Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect was tempted as we are, yet without sin. We look over to Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 9. You have loved righteousness and hated wickedness. Therefore God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness beyond your companions. We go to the writings of Peter. And what does Peter say about the sinlessness of Jesus? 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 19. But with the precious blood of Christ, like that of a lamb without blemish or spot. We go just a little place over in chapter 2, verse 22. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. And then note what John says in 1 John chapter 1, or chapter 3, verse 5 rather. You know that he appeared in order to take away sins, and in him there is no sin. When you are told something over and over and over, what's the purpose of that? It's to ground that point into your beliefs. And as we look throughout the New Testament, we understand that on every turn, God is making the point to us that when we are dealing with Jesus Christ, we are dealing with one who never knew sin. He was holy, separated from sin. But I want us to understand something else. Because when we talk about holiness, holiness also involves being set apart to something. Never do we find holiness simply being the absence of sin. That's not what it means to be holy. If we look at our lives and we say, well, I'm holy because I don't sin, first of all, we're lying because we do. Second of all, we are missing the point of part of the idea of holiness. And I think Jesus gives us this picture. Jesus was not only holy because he didn't sin. Jesus was holy because he acknowledged the Father's will. And he patterned his life here on earth after that will. Again, we look in the New Testament and we find so many places where that point is made. For just a minute here, rather like what we did with the passages on sinlessness, I want us just to look at some, just to read what's said. And one area where we find this point being made very clearly is in the Gospel of John. It seems John, more than any of the other Gospels, bears this point out to us. And so let's just start. Go with me over to chapter 4. And let's just read what's said. And I want us to emphasize, as we look through this, the fact of being set apart to the Father, of patterning himself after the Father. Begin with me here in verse 31. We know that he's had the conversation with the Samaritan woman. We pick up kind of after that. And it says, meanwhile, the disciples were urging him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But he said to them, the food, I have food to eat that you do not know about. So the disciples said to one another, has anyone brought him something to eat? Jesus said to them, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. Go on over to chapter 6, verse 38. And as Jesus is speaking here, note again what he says. For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. Let's return back to chapter 8 where we started. Look at verses 28 and 29. John chapter 8, verses 28 and 29. Jesus said to them, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am He, and that I do nothing on my own accord, but speak just as the Father taught me. And He who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone, for I always do the things that are pleasing to Him. Note again, just a couple more. Look at John chapter 12 and verse 49. John chapter 12 and verse 49. Here the Lord says this, For I have not spoken on my own authority, but the Father who sent me has himself given me a commandment what to say and what to speak. And I know that his commandment is eternal life. What I say, therefore, I say as the Father has told me. And one more we'll note here in John chapter 14, looking to verse 31. Jesus again says, But I do as the Father has commanded me, so that the world may know that I love the Father. You look at all of these passages that John tells us, and what he is saying is, part of the holiness of Jesus is not just refraining from sin. Part of his holiness is the fact that everything is patterned after what his Father desires. That comes out very clearly to us when we look at the time of Jesus' death. We look at Matthew 26, 39, and we know this passage so well. How many times have we heard it spoken before the Lord's Supper is given? And it says, Going a little farther, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And we find just a little ways over, again for a second time, he went away and prayed, My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done. In this relationship, Jesus demonstrated that it's not enough just to hate iniquity. He demonstrated that holiness is the absence of iniquity combined with an unfaltering love for God. That's what holiness is. It's ridding ourselves of things that make us in opposition to God and promoting those things that make us like Him. But now with all of that said, what about us? Are we still in trouble? We look at these things of Jesus, and yes, Jesus lived a holy life, sinless life. Jesus lived a holy life in doing the will of the Father. But what about us? You see, if we look at these things about the holiness of Christ and nothing else, it leaves us in a dilemma. In fact, we might put ourselves in the case of the Christians to whom the Apostle Paul was writing in Romans 10 as he was speaking about Israel when he says they have a zeal, but it's not a zeal according to the knowledge of God. For being ignorant of the righteousness of God and seeking to establish their own, they did not submit to the righteousness of God. You see, apart from Jesus Christ, what we understand is that we are looking at a time when we are in a position where we're trying to come up with our own righteousness, when we're trying to do something on our own accord. And without Jesus Christ, that cannot be done. So what does that then mean for us? It's not holiness on our own merit, because that's an impossibility. You see, all of us have sinned. And so what that then means is we must look and see how Jesus has prepared this way for us. I'm breaking the rules of PowerPoint here, but I needed to put a lot up here today. Because what I want us to understand is His love of the Father and His hatred of sin meant that He went to the greatest lengths to defeat sin and to honor His Father. Though verbose, let that statement sink in for a minute. How do we see the holiness of Jesus Christ? It's because He hates anything in opposition to His Father. He hates anything that is in opposition to godliness. And what He was willing to do is to go to the greatest lengths possible so that sin could be defeated. And you see, that's where you and I have our way into holiness. We understand, as the Apostle Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 21, "For our sake He made Him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in Him we might become the righteousness of God." Now that's love. In that someone is so holy and so set apart to God and so set apart from wickedness that He would do everything He could so that as many as possible could become the righteousness of God. You see, that holiness of Jesus Christ is seen in the fact that He helps us. Let me include one more passage that I think bears that out very clearly. Philippians chapter 2, verses 6 through 8, "Who, though He was in the form of God, did not account quality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied Himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, He humbled Himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross." There we have both of them. He loves us enough to save us from sin. He loves the Father enough that He was willing to lose that position to come to earth so that we could be saved. If you'll bear with me once more, I'd like to take us through a series of verses that make this point so clear. And as we look at these verses, I'm not going to say much about them, but what I want each of us to do is to remember that in what we're reading, we are the ones who are the beneficiaries. We are the ones for whom these things were done. Begin with me, if you will, in Hebrews chapter 1. And as we look in verse 3 of chapter 1, I want you to note what's said about this Son. He says, He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of His nature. And He upholds the universe by the word of His power. After making purification for sins, He sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high. Going over to chapter 2, verse 11. For He who sanctifies and those who are sanctified all have one source. This is why He is not ashamed to call them brothers. Chapter 10 and verse 10. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 10. And by that will we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once and for all. Same chapter, verse 14. For by a single offering He has perfected for all time those who are being sanctified. And one more passage in chapter 13 and verse 12. Notice here the writer says, So Jesus also suffered outside the gate in order to sanctify the people through His own blood. I tell you, you read those verses, and in some ways it takes you to the height of knowing that God loves you, and in other ways it takes you to the depths of realizing what you have done to God. And the way that we find the Lord is through the work that Jesus Christ has done. By Him we are sanctified. He is not ashamed to call us brothers because we have the same source. That's what the Lord has done for us. And so we consider this and we understand that through His selflessness, through His holiness, we have the opportunity to be a part of the family of God. We have the opportunity to be set apart from sin. We have the opportunity to be with the Lord. And I think that's what Peter is trying to tell us when we look over to 1 Peter chapter 2 in these very familiar verses that Peter gives to us. And he says in verses 4 and 5, And as you come to Him, a living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God chosen and precious. You yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. And we continue then over in verses 9 and 10, But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. Why? A people for His own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you receive mercy. We are in covenant with God because of the holiness of Jesus Christ. We are a royal nation, a royal priesthood, a holy people because of what Jesus Christ did for us. And I want us to understand that that has implications. We look at this and we say, yes, and hopefully we rejoice in these verses that we've looked at this morning and we understand what's been done, but that's not where we stop. Because while Jesus prepared the way, there are implications for us in that. And one is, any vestige of self-righteousness is totally removed. If you and I can look at the passages that we've looked at this morning and come away saying, boy, the Lord sure is lucky to have somebody like me, we have missed the entire point of what Jesus has done for us. If we look at these things and say, boy, God is fortunate that I'm at church three times a week. God is lucky that I'm somebody who takes care of others. God is fortunate that I'm sharing. We have missed the entire point of the holiness of God. The whole reason of Christ's sacrifice is because of the mess that we made out of things. And it's only through His love and His love for the Father that we have a way back. No room for self-righteousness. But the implication also is that we seek sinlessness as He was sinless. I think sometimes we read passages like Romans 3:23, all men have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And we almost use that as a backdoor escape. We say, well, yes, all men have sinned. I'm a man, therefore I've sinned. I'm off. God realizes that, which He does. But it's almost the point where we say, well, it really doesn't make a difference then, does it? Oh, yes, it does make a big difference. What was part of the holiness of Jesus Christ? It was the fact that He loved His Father so much that He had no room in His life for sin. And that is exactly where we need to be. You see, sometimes I think we miss the point of sin. We look at it as kind of this checklist. I didn't do this, I didn't do this, I didn't do this. And that's where that self-righteousness comes from. But instead what we say is, I don't want anything to do with that, because I want everything to do with God. And where sin is, God is not. And as Jesus separated Himself from sin, so must I. And all of a sudden, I hope the lights come on for us. And the idea of holiness and separation from sin, but separation to God, begins to make sense to us. Because if we don't understand that, really, we have no reason not to sin. If we don't understand that we want to be like God, then we're not going to have any real motivation to stay away from the things that make us unlike Him. Which leads us to the third implication. And that's that we seek to please God as Jesus sought to please the Father. Holiness is bringing everything in my life into a comparison of what the Lord would want me to do. Who I marry, how I raise my kids, the job that I take, how I work on that job, my attitude toward the laws of the land, my attitude toward brethren, my attitude toward the Word of God, everything is brought together. And just as Jesus could say, oh, it's not my will that I'm here to do, it's the will of my Father. In holiness, we say, it's not my will that I'm here to do, it's the will of the Father. And what that requires of us is a sobriety to sit up and to say, as Jesus lived, so I want to live. Holiness has implications. Christ's holiness has implications. And what we must understand is this, that to be holy, you and I must walk as He walked. You and I must put the Christ in Christianity. Because if we've left any room in our spiritual lives for ourselves, we are not finding what Jesus Christ illustrated to us in holiness. And so as we consider last week that grand holiness of God, and this week as we consider the holiness of Jesus Christ, hopefully that is preparing us now to see the kind of holiness that we need to have in our lives as followers of God.